it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
You've also found many bags of information. I think they call them burn bags. They're supposed to be burned, and they didn't get burned. Having to do with how corrupt the 2020 election was, and when will that all come out?
Mr. President, I will be the first to brief you once we have that information collected. But you're right, it's we are finding documents literally tucked away in the back of safes in random offices in these bags and in other areas, which again speaks to the intent of those who are trying to hide the truth from the American people and trying to cover up the politicization that was led by people like John Brennan and James Clapper and others that have caused really immeasurable harm to the American people and to our country.
Great job. Thank you. We look forward to hearing it. The public looks forward. Thank you very much.
Ooh, yeah, we're talking about burn bags in the 2020 election. You know I'm going to lead the show with that. Hey, this is Wiggins America, and that is President Trump with DNI Tulsi Gabbard from earlier this week. They had their cabinet meeting. It was a long cabinet meeting. And so little things like that happen, and then you got your people who just comb through. I guess there's people whose full-time job is to comb through for clips. I guess they're influencers, actually, probably political influencers, and that's what they do. And that is why we're able to bring you so many clips, is because we amalgamate all of those things together, and then we deliver it back to you. Thank you for being here this weekend on Labor Day weekend. Hope you're having a great one. Weather's nice. Not necessarily pool nice, but maybe you're still getting that in. It's like the end of the summer, right? So hopefully. But the burn bags are a big story, and I don't really know where they're going to go. Here's the weird thing about that clip. Trump is talking about burn bags and evidence from corruption in the 2020 election when he asks Tulsi that question. Tulsi doesn't respond in the affirmative that those burn bags and that evidence are about the 2020 election. It doesn't mean that they're not, but that's not what she says. Here, I'll play the clip again.
Information, I think they call them burn bags. They're supposed to be burned and they didn't get burned, having to do with how corrupt the 2020 election was and when will that all come out?
Mr. President, I will be the first to brief you once we have that information collected. But you're right, it's we are finding documents literally tucked away in the back of safes in random offices in these bags and in other areas, which again speaks to the intent of those who are trying to hide the truth from the American people and trying to cover up the politicization that was led by people like John Brennan and James Clapper and others that have caused really immeasurable harm to the American people and to our country.
Great job. Thank you. We look forward to hearing it. The public looks forward. Thank you very much.
So a lot of people are criticizing the fact in this clip, and a lot of people, most people didn't see this clip, but those who did are criticizing the fact that they're saying, well, Trump is saying that it's about the 2020 election, and then Tulsi is confirming, yes, there are burn bags. So somebody somewhere was supposed to burn these things because there's multiple of them, and they're finding them like in hallways and ceilings and crap. That's what's really crazy is you're like, what is in these things? What were they supposed to burn that didn't get burned? Because if it's not about the 2020 election, she seems to be saying that this is about Comey and Brennan more. And people have rightfully pointed out that the 2020 election would not have involved Comey or Brennan or Clapper or any of that group at all, because those people were fired in 2017 when Trump took his first term. Now, they would have been involved in Russiagate. And so that's what I think is going on here, that Trump's saying, hey, you found this evidence about the 2020 election. And she says, oh, well, if we're talking burn bags, we're actually talking about Russiagate more. So I'm not sure whether they're finding that evidence in burn bags about the 2020 election or whether they're finding it elsewhere. And Trump, you know, he kind of conflates things and just kind of throws things out there. And she may have been answering in the affirmative about the burn bags and not necessarily the 2020 election. However, she herself has mentioned the 2020 election as something that they at the National Intelligence Agency, and she being the director of the National Intelligence Agency, are looking into with incredible scrutiny. And so we're all waiting on that. So that's why this clip was interesting. And when anybody mentions corruption in an election, I take notice, because that's a topic that we have followed very, very closely, both in the affirmative and the negative. I will point out when somebody's making claims that are totally ridiculous. And I will say the chief among them who have been way off is Mike Lindell. His claims have been really bad and way off topic, but he had money and he spent it and people took advantage of him. But there are real claims out there. And so we wait, we twiddle our thumbs and we wait for all of this stuff to come out. What's the timetable on either that or on Russiagate? Is President Obama going to get subpoenaed? Are all these FBI people going to get it? Yeah, probably, but we don't know when. Stick around. And I was never a big Pearl Jam guy. I guess you could call this my Pearl Jam resurgence era. I've been doing this lately with all kinds of bands. I'll hear a song, I'll go, oh, yeah, that's a really good song. I didn't maybe love it or appreciate it when it was out as much. And I go back and get that band's greatest hits usually. I try to do that with AC/DC, but they don't have a greatest hits. They wouldn't put one out. I don't know why, if they contractually wouldn't do it, or the switch of the singers with Brian Johnson and Bon Scott caused that or what. Did that with Toto recently, did that with Dire Straits, among many others. And the latest one is Pearl Jam, going through the entire back catalog of Pearl Jam. They were like, I was in the Target demo. I was 14 when that was really hitting. And so I'm very familiar with all the hits of Pearl Jam, but I never loved them when they were out. Were you a big Pearl Jam fan? I don't know. I just wasn't. I don't know why I wasn't, but I'm re-listening to the catalog and I have a new appreciation for the music, because I kind of already know it from being around the era. But I'm also realizing, I think the reason I never connected with Pearl Jam, and I still kind of don't, even though I appreciate it more now, is their songs are all really negative. They're just, even the nice, sweet sounding ones are negative. I mean, that song is, you know, and my bitter hands, broken glass of what was everything. And it's like, it's a pretty song, but it's negative. Jeremy's about a murderer. You know, don't call me daughter, not fair to. Better half or better man is about wanting somebody better, but just being like, well, I'll settle with this guy. Like, it's all negative. And then my favorite Pearl Jam song, which is not very popular, is Do the Evolution. And I happen to be a Christian, and the words of that song are encompass Eddie Vedder's entire philosophy on life, I think. That he just takes so many shots at Christians and religion in that song and uses it through the lens of evolution, but the criticisms aren't really very good. They're just personal to him, you know. He's like, I'm at peace with my lust and in God I trust. You know, it's a good rhyme, but it doesn't really like shake anybody. Like, if you're a Christian, you hear that and you're like, ooh, well, that really gave me a new perspective, then you were not deeply rooted in the faith, if that stuff shakes you. But it gives an idea of what Eddie Vedder was like. I mean, he's a hopeless dude and his songs reflect it. He's also an extremely talented dude. That whole band was good, but I just wish there was a little bit more of a, I don't know, like something sweeter, something deeper in the music, because it's all negative. It just is, even though it's still really good. Anyway, that's a long diatribe about Pearl Jam. Speaking of really negative, let's talk about Stephen King. Let's talk about the shooting that took place this week. I think that was Tuesday in Minneapolis. Had friends in Minneapolis, of course. You always text your friends and family when there's a tragedy in whatever city that's going on, whether it be man-made or natural, just to make sure they're good. And thank God they usually are. You know, these are very, very small incidents, but you always want to find out. And immediately on Tuesday, you know, it started to break out that this guy was trans. He was 20 years old. It's funny because people are talking about, oh, the issue with white males. Like, the media is all about, well, it's an issue with white males. Why do white males always be the shooters? Why are they always the shooters? And in this case, it was a white male, but the media won't refer to him as a male. They keep calling him she because they're so bound by their own stupid rules. Matt Walsh. How about Matt Walsh? He's going to say it like it is. He said, every trans person, I'm quoting this because there's an argument that goes back and forth. Ready? Every trans person is dangerously delusional. They are all mentally sick, and doctors should be legally barred from affirming their mental illness in any way, adult or child. Everyone knows it. Now innocent children are dying because so many people were too cowardly to speak up. Stephen King weighs in. Stephen King, you know where he's coming from. He's very left. He says, trans is not the problem. He had a gun. That's the problem. Matt Walsh responds, I have multiple guns. I've never murdered anyone in my life. Somehow, even with my guns, I have never experienced the temptation to spray bullets into a church. It turns out that if you aren't a mentally ill freak, having a gun isn't a problem at all. And no response from Stephen King. The problem is, and I watched this guy's manifesto. He put out that video. I watched most of it. I read in the video he tapes his own, like, goodbye letter. So I don't know if that letter exists outside of the video, but you can read the letter. And I read it. I read the whole thing just to see. I don't know. I don't know why I read it. I just wanted to see. And this dude is an absolute train wreck. But the whole letter is a love letter to everybody he ever knew and his family, his friends. He's telling them, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I love you. I hope this doesn't cause you problems, although I'm pretty sure that it will. I'm sorry for the problems that it'll cause you, mom and brother and sister and friend. And he addresses all these people. And the whole time I'm reading it, I'm going, dude, what? He hated Trump, but I don't think it's about Trump. He hated Jews. I don't think it's just about that. He hated everybody. He put hate on everything except his family and his inner circle. So basically, his family and inner circle all were constantly affirming him to get to the place where he was, where he wanted to shoot people. So you get what I'm saying here? You get the picture? He's got a group of people around him who don't really love him. They just want to affirm him. Because if they really loved him and they had any sense of morality, they would tell him or direct him and give him hard truths, which is love. But they did not love him. They affirmed anything he wanted. Anything he wanted to do, they'd say, that's your truth. You need to live that. You need to go all the way in on that. And he regretted it. He even said in one of those things that he regretted becoming trans, but that he didn't want to cut his hair now because that would be an admission of guilt. He had to show that he still was on that side. This is all in there. So he thanks his family who caused this. His family did nothing for him. They coddled him into nutland. They didn't ever really love him. And they pushed him into crazy town where you think the way out is to not only kill yourself, but kill as many people at a church as you can to make yourself known, I guess. Yeah, he wanted to be known. And ultimately, that's what it is. He had Jesus up on a dartboard or on like a target in his house. That's a part of the video. And so he hated Jesus. He hated God. He obviously went to just shoot Christians. And yet, ultimately, what he wanted was to be known by God. And he wasn't. He wouldn't have said that, but that's what he wanted. And sometimes people around you can either guide you in that direction or can be a surrogate for that. I'm not saying that that's the right thing to do, but people around you can know you. And I mean, like, deeply know you. And none of the people around him did. They just affirmed him. And it led to this. Not being known is a big, big problem in this society. It's a big problem with humanity. I shouldn't even say society. It's always the problem. It is the deepest human problem that we are not known. We need to be known by God. I know that I need to be known by God deeper to have deeper fulfillment. If you don't know that, you're barking up the wrong tree. That's the ultimate pursuit of life, is to be known by your Creator. Anything else is a side pursuit. Doesn't mean they're bad. It just means that's the ultimate one.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Budget hawk or not, I don't like the label in general, just because I don't like labels. But I am a fiscal conservative for sure. And one of the big issues that I've been talking about both on the Andy Fry Show and here on Wiggins America on the weekends is the fact that the United States is in absolutely crippling debt. And maybe crippling is too big of a word, because we haven't seen all the effects from it yet, but it's hurting us. It is. And so I'm using the word crippling because we're already feeling the effects of it. We've weakened our currency. Inflation is all because of government spending. You know, something that costs, we were just looking at a newspaper article from 2000 the other day. The price of cottage cheese, Prairie Farms cottage cheese in 2000, was $1.19 for a little pint of it or whatever. Now it's $4. And you could look at that across the board. Why does stuff go up? Why does stuff go up? Well, it's because the government prints money. That's it. That's the only reason. If the government stopped printing money, all of the rising prices would stop. It would be entirely based on demand and supply. That would be the driver. But the government keeps printing money and will continue to print money until there's a reason not to, like you can't get out of the debt spiral, like you're Argentina or something ridiculous. They've kind of climbed out of it, but it's been hard. So all that to say, we have to balance our budget. We have to at least stop adding to the debt before we can start removing the debt. We're $37 trillion in debt, and we've got to stop spending more into debt. So there's good news on this front, though. The tariffs, they actually are bringing in more money than we expected. Is it going to be a temporary high where, wow, we get this big number right now and it looks great, but then it hurts the economy enough that it's not worth it? We don't know that yet. This is kind of an experiment in modern times anyway. But so far, so good. Here's Scott Bessin.
And I think we're going to see a bigger jump from August to September. So I think we could be on our way well over half a trillion, maybe be it towards a $1 trillion number. This administration, your administration, has made a meaningful dent in the budget deficit. The average budget deficit during this term is 26% less than the last 12 months under Biden. And even the CBO, and we don't agree with CBO on everything, as you said, last Friday, on a summer Friday, had to admit that they believe over the next 10 years, the budget deficit will be $4 trillion lower than they had previously scored. $4 trillion, $3.3 trillion of tariff income, $700 billion of lower interest cost. And, you know, I would expect that that number could go up from here. So Mr. President, your return to the White House marked the return of the American worker. Thank you for reclaiming Labor Day for the American people. You're growing the economy for everyone, especially the middle and lower income households who suffered disproportionately under the last administration.
Now, of course, Scott Bessent's going to be all for it. This is part of his economic plan. This is one of the reasons he was brought on by Trump, was to enact these things. But that's a lot of money. That alone, by the end of this year, could fill in the budget shortfall from the big, beautiful bill. That's $1 trillion. So at least we could be balanced to where we're not adding to the debt. What about the $37 trillion in national debt, though? I mean, you got to start somewhere, so that's where you're starting. So that's good news. But I'm looking at an article from Fortune magazine here that says that Trump is bringing enough in revenue from tariffs to have a serious impact on the $37 trillion national debt. Yes, according to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, the CRFB, which gets quoted a lot, alternately calls the revenue being generated by the tariffs to be meaningful and significant. And by the way, some of these groups are not fans of the tariffs, but they're having to admit that they are bringing in a lot of revenue. The impact on the national debt, in theory, pouring $2.8 trillion from tariffs into the national coffers, that may be a little bit longer than just this year, could markedly slow the growth of the federal debt. So hear the language that they're using there. It could slow the growth of the federal debt. The Congressional Budget Office figures, and that's a different organization, CRFB, model suggests that if kept permanent, Trump's tariff regime could reduce the deficit by up to $2.8 trillion in the next decade. Okay, that's nice. $2.8 trillion. That ain't $37 trillion. But that's the problem, is that you're talking about such huge numbers that even if you're bringing in that extra rando $1 trillion a year, it still takes a long time to get out of. So you hope that Trump is the change agent president that we've been hoping for a long time, who's actually going to do things bigger than just, we'll try to balance the budget. We're not even there yet. We could be soon, but hopefully he goes even beyond that. And that's kind of where Doge comes in. And you hoped that they would find something unbelievable, and they haven't done that yet. They're cutting, and that's good. They're doing good work, but they haven't found that magic bullet yet that we've been hoping for. Let's find out what you're going to watch this weekend.
American Media Export. Wiggins America.
Chris Woolsey, our streaming correspondent, is here. Chris, tell us what to watch this weekend.
Oh my goodness, Vizio Watch Free Plus has so many amazing summer blockbusters. We want to really just squeeze the last drops out of this summer movie season, so we have got some incredible titles for you. My favorite this month I want to start with is the 2005 remake of the 1933 original King Kong, directed by Sir Peter Jackson. Incredible star power in this: Naomi Watts, Jack Black, Adrian Brody, Andy Serkis. It is an incredible film.
I just saw a portion of this. It was like a walking through an airport type of situation the other day, and I started watching. I watched about 15 minutes of it, and I forgot how good of a movie that is.
It is really, really fun. A few years back, my wife's boss actually gave us the director's cut on DVD, and it is spectacular. I mean, there are so many Easter eggs in this movie that it should have been sponsored by Cadbury. It's there are so many homages to the original, and so many little, like, if you watch really closely, there are so many stars. Like at one point, Frank Darabont, the director of The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption, plays one of the biplane fighter pilots. It's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah. Boy, the director's cut's got to be like 5 hours long, because that's already a long movie. I saw 100%. Another one on the list here. Season of the Witch is one that I never saw, from 2011.
Very fun, very fun. So this is a, what genre do I shove Nicolas Cage in this one? It's a biopic period piece action fantasy film. So Nicolas Cage is escorting Claire Foy from The Crown. She's been accused of being a witch. He's escorting her. It takes place in like the 12th century, and he's escorting her to her trial as a witch. And as they go along, he comes to understand that what has been she's been accused of is not actually true, and he has to figure out a way to get her out. Ron Perlman from Hellboy's in this as well. Super fun. If you love watching Nicolas Cage chew on the scenery, which I adore, it's a great one.
Is there any actor of the last, other than maybe Pedro Pascal this year, of the last 15 years that has been in more movies than Nicolas Cage?
I don't think so. He really is the Stephen King of Hollywood. I mean, the guy's working on like 7 films at any given time, and I'll watch 6 of them.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. I was hoping for some like industry background as to why Nicolas Cage.
I think at one point he was in crushing debt. He had bought like
that's
2
what I heard
islands, and yeah, I think he bought the Elephant Man's bones from Michael Jackson or some crazy thing. I don't know.
I referenced that movie with Pedro Pascal. I can't remember the name of it, where he actually plays a version of himself trying to get out of debt at the beginning of it, as I recall. I wish I could remember the name of that movie.
The incredible weight of brilliance.
That's
or
it.
Something.
No, the incredible weight of massive talent.
That's it. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful. I adored that film, and I love any time a star has the aplomb to lampoon themselves. I'm on board 1,000%.
Which he totally does in that. I would say Pedro Pascal kind of does in that too. That is a very
Amen.
Self-aware movie. That by
yes,
the end
it
of
is.
It, you're going, am I watching a movie or are they making a movie to show me that they're making a movie? That was
it's very meta. It's very
exactly.
meta, and I'm so impressed that you picked up on all of that. Speaking of which, Pedro Pascal, you need to watch Eddington if you haven't seen that yet.
I haven't even heard of it. What's that?
Oh my gosh. It's a small town in New Mexico during COVID. Pedro Pascal is the mayor and Joaquin Phoenix is the sheriff. And they both have very different ideas about how COVID should go. And man, is it good. Ari Aster directed it, who is sort of an avant-garde A24 director. It is phenomenal.
It
doesn't tell you what to think. It just lays out a table for you and says, enjoy, talk amongst yourselves. It's
really?
Great.
Is it like drama or action
it
movie
is
or what?
Very, very drama.
Okay.
With like, it's very, it feels Coen Brothers-y. It's very dramatic with like drops of humor.
Gotcha.
But man, is a good Eddington. Just came out on streaming last week. Highly recommend it. You of all people, I think, are going to appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm writing that one down. Anything else we should hit, especially on Vizio?
Gosh, there's so much good stuff this month. I would also say Den of Thieves, which is one of my all-time favorite type of caper films, where you get to see the caper from both sides, both the criminal masterminds who are trying to rob this, it's like this bank robbery crew, and then the LA County Sheriff's, this elite unit run by Gerard Butler, who's trying to stop these guys. So it feels like Heat. All those great, crunchy police procedural films. It's really great. Den of Thieves, 2018. Pablo Schreiber is in this. O'Shea Jackson Jr. from Cocaine Bear. Highly recommended. Very action-packed.
Well, if Chris, thank you so much for all the suggestions. And if you've listened to Chris and I talking right now and you don't have anything to watch this weekend, it's your fault. Because we just gave you lots of great titles. So, Chris, thank
Amen.
You again.
You betcha. And people can just go on their Vizio TV, click on Watch Free Plus. It'll take them right to it. If you don't have a Vizio TV, just pop over to your favorite mobile app store, download the free Vizio mobile app, create a free account, click on Live TV, and you too can watch over 300 free streaming channels filled with tens of thousands of free movies and TV shows.
Perfect. Thank you as always. And if you listened last week to Wiggins America, we're going to take a short break here and come back and share a lot of your feedback with the creative idea I had for revitalizing cities. Some of you had creative proposals yourself, and I'm going to share those with you next. Stick around.
Oh, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carman Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, my wife got really mad at me this week. And I have to say, it's mainly because she's sick. You know, she's a teacher. She started school. And I guess right when you start school, maybe if you've got kids, you're maybe experiencing this right now. Something goes around instantly because everybody gets back together. And so my wife's got it. One of my sons has it. My other two don't. And so she wasn't feeling very good. We came back from soccer practice with one of the kids that was not sick. And we walk into our garage, and I wish for the life of me I could figure out how to fix the light on my garage. Because we've got one of those sensors that when you walk in, the light's supposed to come on. Well, the garage door is open, so we walk up. We walk through the garage, of course. The light doesn't come on because it's broken. It never works. And we walk toward the door in the complete darkness because there is no light on. Well, and my son is in front of me by about 5 or 6 steps. It's 8:30 or whatever, coming home on Wednesday night. And then we hear the clap of the top of the trash can. It's one of those big blue ones. So and he screams. He starts screaming. And I can just see the outline of him. And it kicks into my head immediately. Oh, something was in the trash can because the garage door was open. But again, it's dark. We can't see anything. So he starts screaming and running past me. And so I don't know really what's happening. So I just start going, oh, no. Oh, no. I was the worst reaction possible because I'm thinking that he's behind me. So whatever was in front of him is still right in front of me. So I'm going, ah! So I start backpedaling and trying to get out of there. Well, he's already safe, so I don't have to worry about him. And then I come outside, and he is just, like, lost it emotionally. Just was crying. It was like, ah! And I was like, it was a raccoon, wasn't it? And he was like, yeah. And it ran apparently right by him and right by me, and I didn't know it. And it was fine, but it was just like everybody's freaking out, okay? So then we walk inside, and he goes, why did Mom close the garage door? And I'm like, well, because it's only 8:30. You know, we'll close it at night. So we go inside, and I said to my wife, oh, your son is mad at you for not closing that garage door. And she thought I was being dead serious, and she starts yelling, what do you mean? You can't expect me to close the garage door? She was also in bed because she's sick. And it's only 8:30, you know? And then he starts losing it again. He's like, oh, the raccoon's trying to eat me, and now my mom's trail yelling at me. It was chaos in the Wiggins household on Wednesday. But I don't really even know why I'm telling you that story, because I was going to transition into another one. Okay, here's another one. I love when people tell me that they listen to the show. I know for whatever reason, if I'm out and about, people always act like nervous or like they shouldn't approach me in my personal life. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not a celebrity. If I was getting hounded by, if I was Post Malone and everybody was always wanting to get pictures and autographs and stuff, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I need a little personal space. But I don't care. That's why we do the show, is because you listen to it. So if you see me, say hello. And let's talk about issues, whatever. I don't care. As long as I got time, I will definitely stand and talk with you in Ruler Foods or wherever you see me, at a grocery store or out and about. This time it was at a bank, and I was just standing outside. Banker's hours. We're waiting for 9 o'clock to start, and there was another lady standing out there with me, and she says, "Is your last name Wiggins?" And I said, "Yeah." And I assumed that she was going to say, "Oh yeah, I recognize you from the radio." And she said, "I said, oh yeah, you do you listen?" And she's like, "What?" I said, "Do you listen?" And she goes, "To what?" And I said, "Well, you know my name." And she goes, "Well, it's just on your car. It's on your license plate. Part of it is." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's a weird thing to bring up." And so I looked at her car and I said, "Oh, okay. Yeah, that's my last name. Is your last name Zergver83? And she said, "Oh, no, it's not." It's like, you know, yeah, I kind of figured it was just a random set of letters and numbers. So anyway, thanks for saying something when you do listen. And also, if you say something and you don't, I will just assume that you do, because that is the way I am. So that said, I put this out there last week. Now, here's a good transition, right? I put this out there last week that I had this creative solution for getting businesses to move back to cities, because ultimately that's what it's going to take to save cities. You have to have money. You have to have investment and you have to have investors willing to come into your communities. This is what's causing all the problems, the dilapidated buildings, and it's just a self-perpetuating cycle. And therefore, everything looks worse. And you create these food deserts that, you know, you have a huge population and no stores. It's just a bizarre phenomenon. You know why it is. It's because of crime. So I brought up this solution on the Mark Cox Morning Show this week, and we discussed it.
The idea. I loved the show last week where you were talking about how to bring businesses back.
Thanks. Yeah, I was talking about a creative proposal for cities to bring back investment. And one of those ideas is, first, you got to deal with crime. I mean, we're just talking about that. You got to deal with crime. If you're willing to, though, I do believe that there is it's just an idea that a city could offer liability and insurance against crime for any business that's willing to move in. So if you get hit with a riot or you get hit with some petty crime or something, the city would actually take a stake and be responsible for that for you. It's just an idea.
Yeah, it's kind of along the lines of what Dave Spence, when he was on the committee trying to decide what to do with the $750 million we got on the Rams settlement, and he had a phenomenal idea, so we didn't, you know, burn through all this money and have nothing to show for it. He said set up an account, $400 million of it, that would only spend the income of the thing, but give it out as grants. To small businesses, but they would be in the form of a loan to help businesses get upstart, give them seed money, give them started, but they would pay it back at low interest rates over. So it's a perpetual account. It doesn't go away. It keeps refunding itself from the loan money that goes out, and you could do the same thing there. We would give it away in terms of insurance and different things that a lot of companies can't go into business because they can't afford those kinds of stuff.
It's a good point. Yeah. And remind people when they can listen to Wiggins America.
Saturday morning, 7 to 8. Sunday evening, 7 to 8.
Awesome. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate
for having
that.
Me.
Awesome,
right.
Man.
Yeah, good stuff today. Go back and pick up the podcast.
I think it would be a net zero. I think the business you'd bring in would cover the cost that you'd have to put out.
Absolutely.
You know?
The tax generation they would have, and the employment and the jobs.
As long as there's still an incentive, maybe that would be the incentive for the city to crack down on crime because you don't have to keep paying out on the insurance policy.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. That's a good thought. All right.
Wiggins America.
All right, that's me and Mark Cox. And Dan Buck, who's filling in for Kim while she's on maternity. We were talking about this creative solution. And I got to say, what made its way into that conversation without me really giving credit is some of you who contacted me this weekend had parameters for it. Because I just said, hey, what about if we offered insurance to people moving into the city as an incentive to move in? Because then you eliminate at least one concern for crime. And then you might get some stores coming in because, you know, if you get robbed or you get broken into or whatever, the city would actually have to cover that. And it gives the city more incentives to crack down on crime too, as we mentioned in that clip there. But what you said, and I will give credit to Renee, who contacted the show about this. She said, what about if it's specific to crime? So it's not necessarily all insurance. It's just specific to anything that would happen to your business involving crime. Again, as we said in the clip, I think that would be a net zero. It's enough incentive to me that a store that says, yeah, population-wise, they do all the data and they go, we should make money here, except for theft, except for crime, except for the liability that we take on as a store. Well, what if the city could step into that? You probably are making enough back from having the businesses in the city that you'd cover your own costs there, and it's good for everybody. That's my solution, and I think that your feedback was mostly positive about that. I mean, it's a government solution. That's why I'm really hesitant to say this is what should happen, because I don't want the government to expand and do things like this and get bigger and bigger. But at this point, what are you going to do? I mean, the cities are just falling apart. The cities are falling apart. You have to do something, and it starts with, even if it's not that, the big picture here is cities have to address crime, number one. And then they have to court investors because they can't fund everything themselves. They don't have any money if they don't have people in here spending money. So they have to get private investors to come back to the cities. We're long. I'm going to stop here. This is Wiggins America. Get the podcast by typing in Wiggins America, and we'll see you next week.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.